This is Johnny Blue Star. Welcome to Threshold, a global media event. Is the universe just a random dance of atoms? Or is it a manifestation of a supremely intelligent architect? Can its purpose, or our purpose here on Earth, be adequately assessed? Can we commune with it, know its intentions, cooperate with its direction? Here, we define Threshold as a gateway state of awareness, allowing mankind to cross into a place of real cognition. Threshold allows us to approach questions of higher reality through the door of experience rather than mere belief. Welcome to Threshold, where we tear away the veil from commercial media, bringing our audience and participants into another realm of reality and enhanced communication.
This is Johnny Blue Star. We're back with Sarah Westall talking about our work with space travel, or trying to understand the paradigm. Sarah is involved with hosting and producing Business Game Changers, which is broadcast on the Conscious Business Radio Network. Meanwhile, we've been plunging deeper and deeper into the brighter and darker worlds of space travel technology and its implications. One of the things that we had spoken about in the last part of the program was Stanley Kubrick, who claims to have discovered photographic evidence, at least, of various types of artifacts in Mars, pyramidal objects, as well as the face of Mars itself, which is like a statue. If people haven't seen it, it's quite well known, and also ruins on the moon. But furthermore, he claims that in this geometry of the placement of different objects, for instance, one of the insignias in the moon is supposedly a crater that has an equilateral triangle stuck in the middle of it, something that should warn any serious scientist that there's something interesting going on, and that's what he says. But I want to say what he said that these clues are about, Sarah, and get your comments. He says his organization is called the Enterprise. He says he spoke about it many times. The extraordinary rediscovered field of hyperdimensional torsion field physics leads directly to an extraordinary torsion field technology, machines that can affect and fundamentally transform not only all known interactions between energy and matter, such as tapping into a source of limitless non-polluting energy via direct manipulation of the underlying torsion field, or ether, of three-dimensional space, but a technology based on unlimited matter transformation can fundamentally re-engineer even entire solar systems and build artificial worlds. If not terraforming natural ones into any new environment, the terraforming engineers can also actually create worlds. At any rate, you can see, despite the grandiose side of those possibilities, that he is talking about some kind of free energy. Is he not, Sarah?
I think he's talking beyond that. But is he saying that the structures that are found on the moon tell us a code that tells us all these things, or
on the Mars and the moon? Yes, it's you. Are you aware of the straight lines in Wiltshire, England? Well, it's sort of like the straight lines that there is a geometrical pattern, but in this case, it reflects a very high level kind of physics. Yes, that's part of the main purpose. He's talking about codes, and as we proceed, We'll see how that there's another person who's been an investigator of crop circles who is very certain that these codes also exist in crop circles.
Well,
some kind of code.
Well, I think there's codes in a lot of the building structures that we have found on Earth, right? The pyramids and the fact that everything's connected on different latitude and longitudes and all over the world. So there's a lot of that. And if we're going to send messages to each other in code, so I don't know what that's all about. It could be an expansion or extension of that. I don't know if he can read into those structures saying that we can terraform whole entire solar systems and change that. I just don't know if those codes tell us that. I'd like to see more of the details, if that makes sense.
What he's saying at least is that these interactions between energy and matter, he's talking about them tapping into a source of limitless, non-polluting energy.
Well, that's
what I was thinking, that I know that you've been delving into free energy systems.
Well, yeah, the zero point energy field, we have working energy, and from the University of Colorado, they have an excellent physics program there, and they came up with a way there's a lot of patents out there that the government holds and things, so we don't know what's going on with the military and where they're advancing that, but just our own commercial based stuff, we're coming up with things that are getting a lot closer to being able to, you know, do things out on other planets. And part of that is having an energy source, and they have a way to indirectly tap into the zero point energy field. And basically the concept is, you know how an electron goes around the nucleus?
Yeah.
And there's a rule or a law of physics that anything that's going around needs to slow down. So like if we have something that's orbiting the Earth, satellite, every so often you have to give it a burst of energy so that it won't, you know, so it'll just slow down on its own. The Earth orbits the sun, and we're slowing down. And takes a long time for us to slow down, but we're slowing down. Everything slows down. That's the law of physics. So yeah, the idea was is that the electron can't be going around forever without slowing down, without getting energy technologies, these crystals and things. You can slow down the electrons and manipulate at the nuclear level, the atoms and things. And they slowed down the electron to see what would happen if they slowed it down. And sure enough, it got a boost of energy. And yeah. And so they're assuming that's a zero point energy field. So they did it. They're starting to do it in mass. They're sending it through this little catheter and slowing down the electrons. They get a bunch of energy. They take it, you know, by taking it, they're slowing down the energy, and it's just a constant machine. And it's an endless little battery. And, you know, they're starting with batteries so that they can actually get it out into commercial use. So it'll be really amazing. We'll have laptops that don't need to be plugged in. We'll have cell phones that don't need to be plugged in. And this, if they're left alone and they can commercialize it, it should be within the next decade we'll have all that.
Well, if they develop small enough toothpicks, we could manipulate those electrons ourselves, right?
Well, yeah. But, you know, it's incredible what we're capable of doing
Before you say anything else, maybe we better patent it.
Yeah. Yeah, let's patent that little toothpick idea.
Yeah.
But, you know, as far as being able to actually, I don't think us humans have the mental capability yet, the mental capacity to understand how to re-engineer entire solar systems and things. And if they're sending us some code, I think it's beyond our capability of understanding. I really do.
Well,
and
it would be amazing if it was true.
Yeah, I mean,
we could have another Star Trek, part of the series.
Well, and that's why I wonder, where is he getting this information? You know, I don't know how you could just come up with that. I guess
I don't think he did just come up with it. I mean, I think he's worked on it with various physicists. You know, all I can say is what Bertrand Russell said, the suspension of judgment is an essential operation of the intellect.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, absolutely. I mean, I don't know. I just have a hard time. I don't know. My ability to understand physics and energy enough to totally transform an entire universe or solar system is not there. And I don't know if we have the ability to really read all those codes and get to that level yet. I don't know if we have enough detail, if we're close enough. That's where I am. I'd have to see more information to be able to say, okay.
I believe that he thinks that it would lead, that this has to do with free energy too, not necessarily for recreating solar systems.
Yeah, we know that free energy exists. We know it. We've seen it. There's patents out there.
Do you think that, what has this got to do, the kind of techniques you were talking about, manipulating electrons, is this anything at all connected with what Tesla was trying to do? Because I believe he really thought he was on to creating free energy, but was kind of stopped in the middle by his...
Well, I'm... teacher. Yeah, and I don't... I know he was into all of this. He was into all sorts of different. He wanted to get to the energy that's in the earth. He was tapping into zero point energy. He actually, which is interesting about him, he found this Dark Knight satellite. Have you heard about the Dark Knight satellite?
No, just from you right now.
Very interesting development. Back in the 19, let me see, I have a note here of when the exact year he found it. He found, let's find this. I want to give the audience the real year. And back in 1899, he found this unusual, unnatural object orbiting the Earth, and it was sending out signals to him. So he, I mean, back in 1899, he found this. Obviously, we didn't have satellites up, right?
And it maybe was that was Batman.
Yeah, wow. And it was later confirmed by other scientists in 1932. And he actually wrote about it in an article in 1901. And do you want me to read? Let me read a little bit of what he said here.
Go ahead, please.
This was from something he wrote in Talking with Planets. It was an article that he wrote in 1901. It says, "It was sometime afterward when the thought flashed upon my mind that the disturbances I had observed might be due to an intelligent control. Although I could not decipher their meaning, it was impossible for me to think of them as having been entirely accidental. The feeling is constantly growing on me that I had been the first to hear the greeting of one planet to another. I was not merely beholding a vision, but had caught sight of a great and profound truth." Isn't that amazing? There's a Pepsi did a short film on this, and you can find it probably on YouTube or whatever. And they talked about the Black Knight satellite that Nikola Tesla, and then they did a fictionary story about people trying to investigate what this is coming, you know, what it was from. And then people of the world need to be ready to accept that there's advanced life before they will acknowledge themselves to us. But it was this thing done by Pepsi. It was really high quality. It's really interesting that they put that out. But the other thing about this satellite, and back in the, when these other scientists came up with it, that's credited for figuring out radio signals and things. So that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, well, Tesla was a very advanced person, but also very strange. I mean, for instance, he was kind of an enemy, can I say, of Edison, because he invented alternative energy. Alternating current. And of course, Edison invented direct current. And Edison truly wanted to keep that control over that massive amount of money.
Well, yeah. Well, Edison was a businessman. And
one of the things that Edison did was he had demonstrations using a dog where they would electrocute the dog, supposedly using alternating currents. Not really very accurate, but probably it didn't work in the long run, but it probably was very unpleasant.
Well, he was trying to scare people out of, you know, going with Tesla's invention. But Tesla was amazing. He was a scientist. He was a purist, right? He didn't care about business. And that hurt him, obviously. And that's what's happening to us in a macro sense here, is that these inventions that are going on by scientists around the world is, if it, with like free energy, the people who have the ability to make money on oil and energy where you can charge people monthly, they don't want free energy. That takes away their whole industry and their way of living, their means of making a living, right? And their way, their power. So it's very much like Edison and Tesla in their fight.
Ryan, who's working with us on the board, points out that the Tesla also shocked an elephant for anti-Tesla propaganda.
He was a good businessman. He actually didn't come up with a lot of the patents or a lot of the inventions. It was the people in his company that he hired, but he was a really great businessman.
Yeah, he was. Well, we're going to take a break now and invite our friends maybe to look more closely at Threshold.
Oh, wait for me, wait for me. I'll be coming home, wait for me. Oh, my love, my darling, I've hungered for your touch a long, lonely
This is Johnny Bluestar. I've worked as a lyricist with Patricia Welsh for over 5 years, along with Russian composer Edgar Ahrens, a friend and colleague. Her ability as a singer is simply amazing. She brings a unique and dramatic flair to every song she sings. Over the next few months, we shall be releasing a number of these songs, part of an album called Hadley's Castle. Meanwhile, Patricia has been busy creating a super enjoyable collection of classic standards in an exciting 46-song, 3-CD collection.
Music for great entertaining introduces Cocktails, Dinner, and Dessert with Patricia Welsh. 3 hours of continuous music. 46 of the all-time classic standards, spanning decades of hit songs. Going to a friend's home for dinner? Cocktails, Dinner, and Dessert with Patricia also makes the perfect hostess gift. This 3-CD compilation is the perfect background music that sets just the right mood for any dinner party.
I'm crazy for feeling so lonely. There was a boy, a very strange, enchanted boy.
To purchase this album, just go to patriciawelsh.com/CD. That is patriciawelsh.com/CD. You won't be disappointed.
It is the 15th century. El Tesoro de Cielo, a Spanish treasure ship, sends a scouting expedition to a strange island. Golden statues surrounding them prove the enormity of their find. Suddenly, hordes of ghoulish creatures with scaly green flesh and skeletal wings descend upon them from the sky.
What do you think of this, Rufio?
These creatures are fragile, Captain. We could take them with our swords.
They seem supernatural. Who knows what powers they possess?
Fallen angels, weakened by their treason.
My God! Are you saying they're Nephilim, the devil's host?
I'm saying whatever they are, we can take them. Do any of you cowards dare join me?
Up against sharp knife-like nails and hideous fangs, the men's swords rip into slimy green flesh. Though black blood pours copiously from their half-naked bodies, the creatures miraculously persist. Can the crew survive this bloody, cursed battle?
Find out more by Googling The Thrice Born, a new sci-fi supernatural novel by Carlos Lopez Avery and Johnny Bluestar. Google with the words Carlos Johnny Kendall, The Thrice Born. That's Carlos Johnny Kendall, the Thriceborn.
More one touches on the idea of space travel, and perhaps an idea as lofty as man's true place in the universe, there comes one and another very intrusive and strange phenomena that frankly perplexes us. One of the speakers in a recent conference you discussed with a dark journalist about the private space program, a secret space program, was Linda Moulton Howe, a filmmaker and documentarian who gained notoriety for her investigation of cattle mutilations. Putting aside her contribution to that conference for a moment, here's a discussion of her first real awareness of the relationship between cattle mutilations and something from somewhere far away, as explained by the dean of Strange Talk Radio in his interview, Art Bell.
Tex Graves was the first sheriff that I was referenced to as being somebody who had been by then to about 236 mutilation sites. Think about that. One sheriff in one place, and know that in the state of Colorado during that period of time, that each county in some sections was having over 200 animal mutilations. So in Colorado alone, in a 5 to 10 year period, there were thousands. Art, there were thousands. So now I'm going for the first time trying to get my bearings in a story that I only have the Denver Post and the Rocky Mountain News and the TV stations away from my own TV station reporting all these strange, bloodless, unusual deaths. So he had retired and was in a vacuum cleaner shop in Logan that he was repairing vacuums after being a sheriff for so long. And he had gotten for me specifically to look at, I remember the count because I counted them all out on the floor, 266 color Polaroid photos that he had taken of all these mutilations. And as I went through, there was one particular one that I asked him about. It was a steer, a heavy steer, a big steer, all black, lying on its right side, and the front legs and the back legs were together so neatly in such neat parallel that it looked artificial. But this is the way the sheriff photographed it at the mutilation site, that nothing had moved. Those hooves were on dry powder, and they are neat. There's no movement. There's no struggle. There's no tracks around this body, not even the steer's own tracks. And the head was down in a hole that the sheriff told me was 8 inches deep. And he said he stood there looking. The ear, the eye, the tongue, the jaw, the genitals, and the rectum are gone. The legs are as neat as a pin, no tracks. And here the head is down in an 8-inch hole. And he said, Linda, the only conclusion that we can draw is that whatever did this to this steer kept all of the body completely, totally paralyzed and immobile, except for the head. And the head, in some sort of agony, dug an 8-inch hole before it died. Now, I felt several things at that moment. I felt rage of what seemed cruelty. I felt fear about a technology that could do this. And then I said to Sheriff Graves, you're describing something flaunting its ability, as if there almost are calling cards in the way these mutilations are done, whether it's horses and cattle or dogs and cats, pigs. It's every domestic animal that you can think of. And I have seen photographs of deer, elk, marmots that have been subjected to exactly the same bloodless excisions. And the U.S. Forestry Service has known about them. And when I said to Sheriff Graves, it feels like something is flaunting, he looked at me smoking a cigarette, eye to eye, and he said, the perpetrators of these animal mutilations are creatures from outer space.
Talk about a disruptive technology, Sarah. I'm talking about a seemingly bloodless surgical technology invading the world of cattle ranches, local law enforcement, and forest rangers for years and years, which is ultimately passed onto the world as a phenomenon sometimes associated with UFO phenomena, but in and of itself revealing a very unusual and complex surgical technique. Nothing taught in medical schools at the time, anyway. Well, how does this fit into our worldview? What do these events mean?
I don't know if it fits into the mainstream media view. I mean, they tend to, but you know, at the time that she did this, she won an Emmy for this. This was, I think it was an HBO series called A Strange Harvest. Yeah. And she won an Emmy for her investigative work. So at that time, we were much more open to looking at these things. And
there are lots of them though. And I think they're still going on.
Yeah, they're still going on. And it's happening more in other countries than it is happening here. But it's not the type of medical advancements that we have. As far as I know, we still can't do these things. And to be able to create holes with no blood and perfect incisions, and you know, it's some kind of laser cutting that doesn't burn. It's absolutely amazing. And it, you know, they look like they're doing research. They're researching the animals for some reason. And why are they doing that? And is it our own people researching, or is it, you know, that are way more advanced and we don't have access to that? Or is it some other creature that we don't? Obviously, it's not the mainstream people doing this. It's either military that's advanced, or it's somebody from outer space or some other dimension, because it is happening. They are seeing it. This is real, and they're documenting it. And these people aren't weirdos. They're normal, everyday researchers going in there. And if you listen to her talk, she was absolutely shocked when she first saw this stuff. It really scared her. You know, I mean, it scared these people. This is the first time they went in at this point, and they never heard anything about this. She was actually a television producer, and she did scientific stuff, you know, technology and things, medicine. And she was very smart. She worked in mainstream media and HBO special to do this. And she was just shocked when she first saw this, and it scared her. And so it was an average person going in and learning all these things. And then she became mesmerized by it and go, oh my God, there's more to all this. And I can't stop researching this now. And then it became her life, you know, obsession almost. It's her passion. Obsession's not a good word. It's her passion to figure it out. And she's been traveling all over the world now and looking into this stuff. But she really did dig into something that was unexplainable. And has it reached the average person? I don't think so. I think the mainstream media laughs at this stuff now. Back at that time, they were taking it seriously because nobody knew what was going on. And maybe it's because it's not happening on our farms as much as it's happening now in other countries. And maybe that is why we're not talking about it as much. But it is a real phenomena. And the question is, who's doing it and why?
Yeah, it is a real question. We're going to go to a break now, and we had played Unchained Melody before by Patricia Welch, and now we're going to play something promoting Edgar Ahrens, who is a composer who works with her and who sometimes does scores for TV and movies. I've worked with Russian composer Edgar Ahrens for quite a few years, building an inventory of songs, many of which feature singer-performer Patricia Welch. We will soon be releasing these songs, components of an album and a musical in progress called Hadley's Castle. When Edgar and I first got together, I was amazed by the brilliance of his musical scores created for movies, TVs, and animations. Here is a sample of the work he did on the Russian TV series, available now on Amazon, called The Secret Agent's Memoir, which had two seasons. This score is called Escape and was created for the first season. I am very pleased to say that Bridge of Light Productions, a division of New Galaxy Enterprises, is proud to be the contact point for television and film companies seeking information about this amazing composer's me at johnnybluestar@gmail.com. That's johnnybluestar@gmail.com. Galaxy Enterprises is a media company specializing in wide-ranging content like novels, nonfiction books, screenplays, commercial advertising, web content, etc. One of our most esteemed providers is illustrator Robert W. Zalo. I work on all my most important projects like book covers, logos, web design elements with Robert. As an illustrator, he worked on the Ignatz-nominated comic book, The Expert's Guide to Killing Things That Go Bump in the Night. His skills encompass advertising, magazine illustrations, gaming, comic books, TV production, and scenic painting. His clients include Comcast, Adelphia, Haven Talent, Forceworks, High Octane Theater, Star Creative Advertising. If you wish to contact Robert, go to johnnybluestar.com and let me know. That's johnnybluestar.com. For artist illustrator Robert Zalo, an essential component of all the work we do. Maybe he can help you too.
Boots in Manhattan is a coming-of-age novel by Ray Boylan and Johnny Bluestar. It is about a young Tom Boots Raymond who grows up in New York in the 1940s, who is a member of a street gang.
My friends and I were about to start our own game of stickball when Rabbit Lacey, the head of the Rattlers, came up to us and tried to move in on our game. We were called dwarves, the youngest members of this stupid gang.
Hey, Kevin, I need you to get some gloves and some stuff I left at my place.
No, this is our game.
Hey, are you my good little dwarf or what?
You've been calling me a dwarf since I was six. We're not your personal slaves, pal.
Hey, what is this? A dwarf rebellion? All right, big guy. We ditched the dwarf thing. We make you guys regular rattlers.
No, it's too late.
He looked at Jay and me. We looked away. Rabbit was now angry, and he pushed Kevin hard with the palms of his hand. Kevin tried to ram him in the stomach, but he stepped aside, throwing Kevin into the curb where he fell to the ground, bleeding profusely at the knee. Still, he managed to get up.
My street.
Kevin shouted at Rabbit, pointing at him with an angry index finger.
Find out more by Googling Boots in Manhattan, a 1940s coming-of-age novel, part one of the novel series The Foot Soldier by Ray Boylan and Johnny Bluestar. Google with the words Boots in Manhattan, Ray Johnny Kindle. That's Boots in Manhattan, Ray Johnny Kindle.
Well, you know, Sarah, there are several areas that are kind of related to what we're talking about. One of them is technology that we can use to travel to faraway places like other planets while our bodies stay here. And the other is, our mind to be here. Also, there is some very interesting stuff about the past architecture we're finding on our own planet. Maybe you could tell us about these things.
Well, both of those topics are extremely interesting. Well, we can start with the architecture that we're finding here, and then I'll move on to the technology of us traveling to distant planets. But what we're finding all over the world is old architecture that we didn't realize was there. I mean, the common theme is we think that we were hunters and gatherers 10,000 years ago, right? And that in ancient Mesopotamia is when they first started coming up with writing and agriculture and what is meant by, you know, modern society type things where you have roads and you have architecture and you have government and things like that. Well, they're realizing that we were probably way more advanced and more advanced than that before we became less advanced. And they're unearthing advanced structures everywhere. The pyramids point to that as well. No, any real open-minded researcher do not believe the pyramids are, you know, were there as tombs. I mean, people have become, that's done. Nobody believes that. They just
What do they believe now?
You know, maybe the newer ones were, but the old ones believe that was maybe an energy device or something else. I mean, if you look at the way that was constructed, it's absolutely, we can't do that today. The way these huge blocks of stone were put together in without any, you know, with not being off at all or maybe just a fraction and having lines that you can't even put a credit card through, it's absolutely amazing. And then being in line with different structures around the world on the latitude and longitude and not being off by even a degree, that's amazing. And back then, they are not going to be able to do that back then as hunters and gatherers. So obviously, we were more advanced at some point. I mean, it's just obvious. You can't do that unless you're more advanced than hunters and gatherers. And I mean, that's just a fact. And the other things that they found is they found actual machining tools when they were building these structures that you can't do with you know, hand tools. It's a machine-based bit, diamond bit type marks that are in these structures that they have found. And they found these huge pieces of stone that are 200 tons and massive stones that just hadn't been moved yet, that were still in the quarry. And so they know that it was shipped for long distances. So, you know, the thoughts are that sound technologies, ways to levitate with sound, they are realizing that we can do a lot more with sound than, you know, in laboratories, they've been able to levitate small objects with sound. We don't know how to do large objects. And so they know that there was more going on in our past than what we think it is. And that's absolutely fascinating. In South Africa, they thought that there was hardly anybody there. But in reality, they found thousands, if not millions, of structures under the ground. And with the new, you know, with the satellites that we have and Google Earth and things, they can see the structures under the ground now that we couldn't see before. So our new technology and the new stuff that's available to us is showing us that there's just so much more there. It's really amazing. So if anybody's interested in archaeology, it's an awesome time to be alive.
You think it's alien?
I don't know if there's enough facts to say that it's alien or if it's just we were much more advanced in our past.
I see. Well, what about the other technology that you're talking about, for our bodies to stay here, our mind to be elsewhere?
Well, I mean, just think about it. We're getting closer to being able to travel. We have probes that can go past Pluto, right? So we know how to at least get small things there. SpaceX and other commercial organizations are working hard to actually create the technology to be able to transport us places. So they're getting serious. People are getting serious about creating the technology to move. But there's other things that are pointing to the fact that we're getting close. Like the zero point energy advancements that we have, we know we can do some of these things. Other things is we have the ability to feed our eyes video. So like if you have a signal on Mars, you can directly signal it to your eyes as if you're seeing it through your own eyes, right?
Really?
They have that technology. Yeah, they've had that for a while. So we know we can do that with our bodies. We can tap into our own bodies and manipulate and control our bodies as if it's sending our own signals. So that we know we're starting to be able to do. The other thing that we can do is hyper-realistic holograms. We have the ability to put a hologram there and make it seem like we're actually looking at something. And I did a show on this, but you know, the Elvis Presley and the Michael Jackson and Marilyn Monroe, they have these avatars or these, they call them assets, but they're making these ultra-realistic holograms where you can't tell it's a hologram. And they're doing it with medicine as well, where they are teaching people how to operate on hearts and different organs with super hyper realistic holograms. And so like if you're cutting through something, they have the ability to put on a glove where you feel like you're cutting through something. And so when you're cutting through skin, it goes pretty easily. When you're going through cartilage, it gets harder and it crunches. And then when you go through bone, it's really hard. And so they're getting to that point now. So let's say you combined all those technologies that we're getting close to, and we decide, okay, we might want to go to Mars, but we don't really want to go to another solar system because the planet really isn't good for us, right? We can't live there. We might be able to start terraforming Mars or some other places, but it's so far away and it's so expensive. But what we can do is we can send out a spaceship with this different robotic technology, and we can feed our eyes. We can have all of us have our own hologram, and we can be there. For all practical purposes, we can feel like we're there.
Are we going to wind up being with these big heads in space, in, you know, roaming around in flying saucers because all we're using is our brains?
Well, I mean, we can put a whole body to, I mean, it's like the Avatar concept, right? We could put together anything we want that would be us on another planet experiencing these things. We would feel it because we can send signals to our own body. We can put things to a video to our eyes. We can feel like we're there for real.
Well, I feel like my head is growing a little bigger, but I don't know.
I mean, does that make sense? I mean, we are.
It makes sense. And
it's
isn't
that far out. We are actually closer to being able to do it. And I think by the end of the century, we'll be able to do this stuff.
Well, you know, I want to go to a slightly different subject because you mentioned something before, which is very true, the dangers of nuclear weapons. And what have UFOs got to do with this? I had a tremendous experience in meeting Robert Hastings. And, you know, it's often difficult to figure out the motivations of extraterrestrial visitors. And according to certain theories, many or all of the sightings are fake. But whether this is true or not, there's a set of sightings that makes me wonder what it's all about. These are sightings that were meticulously chronicled by Robert Hastings in his book, UFOs and Nukes. There are a number of UFOs in the proximity of nuclear missiles, and lots of them, actually. And Robert Hastings has interviewed something like 150 military officials who worked at these classified sites. And he notes that several times UFOs have shut down and actually activated nuclear missiles, not only in this country, but also at least once in Russia. I'd like you to listen to a description of a particularly important incident.
One of the most controversial but perhaps significant examples of UFO involvement with our weapons was the Big Sur incident that you describe in your book. In this alleged event, which occurred in 1964, an Atlas D intercontinental missile launched from Vandenberg Air Force Base was seemingly shot down by a disc-shaped UFO. Maybe you could fill us in about details about this incident, the implications for government involvement in preventing the open disclosure of UFO events.
We primarily know about this case through the very courageous efforts of Dr. Robert Jacobs, who was an Air Force lieutenant in 1964. He was the officer in charge of photo instrumentation at the base. His job was to use a high-powered telescopic camera to film, missile tests over the Pacific Ocean. He has been able, through his personal log and other means, to pin the date of this event to probably sometime in September of 1964. What they witnessed, long story short, through the telescopic camera was as the dummy nuclear warhead, which they were testing, which was being sent out over the Pacific Ocean for a splashdown, they witnessed on film a disc-shaped object with a dome flying in from out of camera frame, circling this warhead, and at four different junctures firing what looked like, he said, not quite like lightning, but very similar to lightning in appearance, a beam of some kind from the UFO to the dummy warhead. There were four separate flashes, at which point the UFO left the camera frame and the warhead began to spin and tumble and fell into the ocean hundreds of miles short of its target. A second officer who was involved in photo interpretation, a retired major named Florenz Mansman, who, after retiring from the Air Force, went to began research at Stanford University on various technical systems, very intelligent, technically oriented man, has come forward after critics said that Bob Jacobs was lying, has come forward and corroborated his story. There are letters at my website on the document page in which Mansman saying Bob got it 100% right. But Mansman was a little reluctant to talk about it because the film was confiscated by the CIA, and he clearly says that. but apparently there was some pressure applied to Mansman, or at least he was concerned about pressure, and so what he said was far less provocative than Bob Jacobs. Bob Jacobs, on the other hand, said, I felt that the public had a right to know about this. He wrote a couple of magazine articles about it in the early 80s, at which point he began getting death threats over the telephone. Clearly somebody was very unhappy that he had gone public with a story that confirmed that whoever fly the UFOs not only can disrupt the functionality of nuclear missiles in their silos on the ground, but can actually pace them in space, catch up with them, as the film clearly demonstrated, and shoot them down, literally.
Are they looking after us, Sarah? Are there something out there that is actually concerned?
I hope so.
I do too, but you know, there's another phenomenon that I want to bring up. And this is very, very interesting to me. And it was the actual subject of my first program. You know, we were talking about archaeological coding being implicit in some kind of extraterrestrial civilizations in Mars and the Moon. And you talked about this strange archaeology on our own planet that seems to have some connections between different archaeological sites. But there is also another kind of coding that seems to exist in crop circles that have frequently appeared on Earth. Filmmaker and songwriter, musician Patty Greer has spent countless hours in dozens of crop circles, you know, laying down, trying to concentrate, trying to pick up whatever she can because she feels like there is some communication. Anyway, all of this is mostly in England, but sometimes in other countries, including here. She does not necessarily attribute these to extraterrestrials, but rather to some kind of intelligence, perhaps indigenous extra dimensional creatures or beings right here on Earth and perhaps somewhere beneath the Earth's surface. Listen to what she says, Sarah, about crop circles and its messages.
So I left my first crop circle with that many questions, and in all the years that have come, of course, the answers have been very clearly given to me, along with the information of why we are receiving messages in fields of wheat, corn, barley, oats, Brussels sprouts. We've seen crop circles in grass, short grass in parks, where all of a sudden there will be this raised, darker green circle, which I know most people have seen, because when I saw the photos of that, I went, oh my God, I've seen that before. And the following year, those same circles in city parks that had that raised green circle, if it just looked like freak, had mushrooms in a circle, which is why the ancients called crop circles fairy rings.
Wow.
And the paranoid ones called them devil circles. But, you know, I don't give that much credence. I'm really more about the reality of what is. And what is that crop circles have an enhanced electromagnetic field. Crop circles, until foolish adults come in or humans come in and have to destroy it for whoever paid them to do so, they're perfect. They're enhanced, they're perfect, they're immaculate, and they are giving us information. And when we look at decades, history of crop circle documentations, we see that they come in codes, binary, Morse code, even Braille. They come in mathematics, sacred geometry, Fibonacci sequence, the Mandelbrot. I mean, all of the Platonic solids are found in crop circle patterns. And when we look at all those patterns in one spell, and we sit and just focus on pictures of crop circles, all of a sudden, there's these places in our mind, these lost DNA strands are reawakened, and all those ancient symbols being put before our eyes, through the heart, through the mind, are like these compressed files that explode into tremendous amounts of data and wisdom within us.
Wow. What do you think of that, Sarah?
Well, you know, crop circles is another one of those things that are made fun of in the media. And when you look into it, you know, there are a lot that are bogus, where they show those people with their big planks and they walk through it. But the ones that are unexplainable, where the shafts aren't broken, because when you do that, you break the shafts, and they just look different, right? Or they're just so complex, there's no way you could do it in the night without being able to look at it from a higher, it's very complex. But the other thing is that they match signals that were sent out by SETI. From what I understand, they're matching communication patterns sent out from different organizations. And I thought that was fascinating when I learned some of that.
I want you to finish.
I was going to say, I don't know what to make of it other than I would think that, you know, when I was talking about the fact that we can travel, we have the technology to travel, I would think that we might do something like that. If we think people are communicating with us, maybe we would try to send messages like that.
Well, you ought to go, I don't know if you have, or you're familiar with Patty, but pattygreer.net. That has a lot of her full-length features that are relatively inexpensive, but really, really interesting because she's been in the field with cameras and, you know, she won awards too. She's a very, very interesting person. And as you can probably tell, there's something going on from just listening to her for a few minutes. I wanted you to just tell people, you know, how to, you know, something about your current plans and more about your show for just a minute or so before we have to leave.
Oh, well, excellent. You can always reach my show at sarahwestall.com. I have a really fascinating one coming up on Monday with the president of SpaceX, which I brought up before, Gwen Shotwell. And I have some collaboration coming up with Dark Journalists. I'm going to be covering economic news and issues, but I always cover things that are changing, innovation, disruption. Where are we really going? I really like to get to the people that are on the ground and really understand it, the entrepreneurs and the innovators out there, and really give people an idea of where, you know, where we're going. But I'm hoping we can all work towards making this world a better place for humanity and not just be on a goal of making money for the sake of making money. We're not going to shut down innovations and technologies so that we can keep our cash flow going, nor are we going to go after technologies and innovations knowing that it can hurt society. So it's a ethical program, more conscious, business conscious program on what's going on with change. There's a lot of fear. There's a lot of anxiety with all the significant changes that are going on geopolitically and economically.
You have to say goodbye now, Sarah. It's just I'm going to be listening, and I hope other people will listen to your show and also to mine. And we'll be back next week on Threshold Radio with more interesting visits to important and strange and sometimes extremely enlightening places.
Thank you. I had a really great time.
Me too.